This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, August 17, 2007. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. A massive protest takes place outside the Heathrow Airport to protest aviation's contribution to climate change. We'll hear from Nigeria, where violence increases as militants fight for a piece of the country's oil resources. And demonstrators plan a protest against an immigrant detention facility that houses children in Texas. Those stories, plus the weekly political news roundup after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with today's headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced today that Russia will resume long-range bomber flights on a regular basis. The flights were part of routine patrols during the Cold War, and this week marks the first time in 15 years that these types of combat patrols have taken to the skies. Earlier today, Russia, China, and four Central Asian nations participated in war games after the conclusion of a regional summit. U.S. State Department spokesman Sean McCormick shrugged off the move, saying, quote, "If Russia feels as though they want to take some of these old aircraft out of mothballs and get them flying again, that's their decision." In other news, the security situation on the ground in Iraq remains grim, with the discovery today of 19 dead bodies in Baghdad and three more in Haditha. 21 suspected insurgents were also killed today in the province of Dalaya, where a major offensive is underway. Meanwhile, a U.S. soldier died today when insurgents attacked a U.S. base in northern Baghdad with mortars. Hiba Dawood has more.
U.S. forces in helicopters bombed the mosque in Tarmiyeh, north of Baghdad today, as worshippers observed Friday prayers. 20 men were arrested after the bombing. U.S. forces spokesman Major Mike Gracia said that their base had been attacked by insurgents that were allegedly using the mosque as a haven. Thousands of U.S. soldiers have spread out across Baghdad and its surrounding cities as an attempt to secure the area while the Iraqi government deals with major internal problems. Iraq's main two Shiite parties have met in Kurdistan with the two main Kurdish parties to discuss the political situation in Iraq. No senior representative was invited to the meeting. The formation of the Shiite Kurdish alliance and the isolation of the Sunnis could cause further instability in the government. The breakup of the government at such high levels could seriously jeopardize efforts for Iraqi security forces to take over policing operations. This, in turn, could lead to prolonged U.S. occupation. I'm Hiba Dawood for FSRN.
The U.S. Army has found that the suicide rate for active-duty soldiers is at a 26-year high. The annual Army Suicide Event Report released this week found that more than a quarter of the nearly 100 soldiers who took their own lives last year did so while deployed in Iraq or Afghanistan. The military report found a, quote, significant relationship between suicide attempts and number of days deployed, but downplayed the factors of extended tours, repeated deployments, and post-traumatic stress disorder as major causes. The Army statistics do not include veterans who have committed suicide after leaving the military. The Justice Department has released new statistics on the number of allegations of sexual violence in prisons and jails during 2006. This report is part of the data collections required under the Prison Rape Elimination Act of 2003. Zain Al-Amin reports.
The report documents more than 6,500 allegations of incidents involving sexual violence against incarcerated men and women during 2006. That's a 21% increase over the past 2 years. More than half of these allegations implicate prison staff members. The report indicates that authorities were unable to substantiate 55% of the allegations, and close to a third of the claims were determined to be unfounded. Jason Zeidenberg of the Justice Policy Institute said that this is the tip of the iceberg.
The reports here are based on what prisoners have said to corrections officers. That inherently limits the numbers that people will be reporting, because it takes a lot within a correctional setting to go up to a correctional officer and then be able to report a case.
Zeidenberg added that these attempts to assess these violations is a result of increased public questioning about the impact of the growing prison system in the U.S. The U.S. prison system is the largest in the world, with a population of over 2 million people living behind bars. For FSRN, I'm Zain Al-Amin in Washington, D.C.
An aftershock registering 5.5 on the Richter scale shook the region of Peru most affected by Wednesday night's earthquake. Pamela Cueva has more from Lima.
Official data puts the death toll at 510, with 1,500 people injured. At least 85,000 people have been left homeless. Rescue workers expect the number of casualties to increase as debris has not been fully removed from the area. The hardest hit city of Ica is currently suffering a severe shortage of water and food. Coffins are also needed to bury the dead bodies that have been left in the city's main square. Services like telecommunications and electricity are in the state of collapse, leaving people desperate for information about their loved ones. Meanwhile, rescue parties are working around the clock. The country's largest labor union, the General Labor Confederation of Peru, has called on its members to donate blood and provisions and to collaborate with the removal of debris. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Pamela Cueva with Alfredo Cuadras from Lima, Peru.
Due to the collapse of telephone services in the area, FSRN reporters in Lima have set up an email account for Peruvians living abroad, seeking information about the rescue efforts. Questions or requests for information can be directed to peruhelp@gmail.com. And finally, the rescue operation at the Utah coal mine, where six workers have been trapped since last week, has been suspended indefinitely after a mine shaft collapsed on rescue workers Thursday. The accident killed three rescue workers and injured six others. The miners have been trapped underground since August 6th, and it is unknown if any survived the initial cave-in. Seismologists blamed Thursday's collapse on minor seismic shifts in the adjacent mountain. Those are today's headlines. I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
More than 30 people have been killed during fighting between Nigerian security forces and militants in the Niger Delta region. Security forces say they're carrying out a major offensive against militants whose activities have forced Nigeria to cut its oil export by about a quarter. It's the latest in the growing incidents of bloodshed in the Niger Delta region, where militants are fighting for a share of oil resources. FSRN's Samuel Lokoya reports from Lagos.
The official death toll in the military operation carried out on Thursday in Port Harcourt, the largest city in the Niger Delta, is put at 32. But many people believe the casualty figure is far higher. The militants who are the targets of the military operation are youths who have taken up guns in an effort to get a share of oil revenue. Oil proceeds are currently shared between the Nigerian government and Western oil companies operating in the Niger Delta region. Even though Nigeria is the eighth largest oil exporter, people of the Niger Delta, where the oil is taken from, remain some of the poorest in the world. Young men like Boma George say the situation has caused them to take up arms.
If it is arms, I will carry to defend my land. If it is my blood to be shed for my people to be freed, I will do that. I need to fight for my people to get liberation. And that is why I decided to fight to make sure that we achieve our goal. That is to say, resource control and self-determination.
In the last 1 year, militants have kidnapped more than 200 foreign oil workers and have attacked several oil installations, forcing Western oil companies operating in the region to scale down their operations. Oil exports account for more than 90% of Nigeria's income, and in desperation to protect the oil industry, the government is increasingly relying on the military. But many, like Sumaila Abdullahi Mohammed, a federal legislator, say the quest of the people for a share of oil proceeds must be addressed.
The issue is not just that of a military option. We are in a democracy, and democracy dictates that dialogue must be explored. Whether we take the military option, in the final analysis, we must come back to the discussion table. So the important thing is to understand what are the basic issues at stake and address them. What are the basic issues at stake? The issue of governance. But more than the issue of governance is the issue of equity in the generation and distribution of these resources. This is a second issue that needs to be addressed.
When Umaru Yar'Adua took over as Nigeria's president in May, He promised to address the aspiration of the people of the Niger Delta. But the people say they are still waiting for him to show his commitment. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Media News Group released a memo this week saying it will no longer recognize the Editorial Employees Union at the Oakland Tribune and five other Bay Area newspapers. The union says it will appeal the company's decision at the National Labor Relations Board. FSRN's Max Pringle reports.
The move comes as the Denver-based chain merges its Alameda newspaper group, which includes the Tribune and five other papers in the Contra Costa newspaper chain. Media News added the Contra Costa Times and the San Jose Mercury News to its chain after acquiring them from the McClatchy Company last year. McClatchy had acquired the papers from Knight Ridder just weeks before that. Media News says it decided to sever its relationship with the Media Workers Guild because a majority of its employees under the new Bay Area News Group, East Bay, are not union members, which means the company no longer has to recognize the union. Calls to Media News were not returned by airtime. The company has said a consolidated, streamlined operation will improve the quality of the newspapers. For its part, the Media Workers Guild says it won't take the decision lying down. Carl Hall is local representative of the California Media Workers Guild and a San Francisco Chronicle reporter currently on leave.
We're going to fight it. We filed unfair labor practice charges with the NLRB, and we're meeting with our lawyers and others right now. We've informed the company that we intend to fight it in all the appropriate venues.
Media News and the Media Workers Guild had been in negotiations for a new contract when the decision to decertify the union came down. The union represents about 125 editors and writers at the Tribune and the other news group papers. The Guild's Carl Hall says the Media News consolidation and decision not to recognize the union makes it easier for the company to cut staffing, which affects the quality of the paper's local coverage.
This is not really motivated by a desire to obtain a better quality newspaper in any sense. It's motivated, we think, by a desire to bust the unions, and what they describe it as an economic move. That doesn't mean it's going to get any better for readers.
Author and media critic Norman Solomon agrees. He says he doesn't accept Media News or most other newspaper chains' cries of poverty when the industry, by and large, remains highly profitable.
If you look, though, at what newspapers give to corporate owners, their rate of returns have been pretty darn high. But, you know, it's the nature of the corporate imperative imposed from the top down that good rates of return are never good enough, and there's always a quest for more and more.
The Media Workers Guild presented evidence this week to the National Labor Relations Board. The union wants the NLRB to overturn the company's decision to decertify the union. The union says it will also ramp up its public outreach campaign with a series of rallies and news conferences in the coming weeks. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Max Pringle in Berkeley.
Demonstrators are preparing to hold a vigil Saturday to protest the Hutto Immigrant Detention Center in Taylor, Texas. The facility currently holds about 400 prisoners, all non-Mexican undocumented immigrants being held on non-criminal charges. In the past, immigrant parents with dependent children were released with a notice to appear. Now, whole families, including children and pregnant women, are being held prisoner in what critics say are deplorable conditions, dubbing the center Gitmo for Children. Meanwhile, three immigrant detainees have died in federal immigration facilities in this past month. A pregnant Mexican woman in Texas, an epileptic Brazilian whose family says he was denied medicine in Rhode Island, and a Mexican AIDS patient in California. This past weekend, some 200 immigrants being held in a Seattle facility were treated for nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, most likely caused by tainted food. In an unrelated case, a prison guard at the Raymondville Detention Center in Texas recently made public that immigrant prisoners at that facility are consistently fed spoiled food, including expired milk and food with maggots. Jay Johnson Castro works with FreedomAmbassadors.com and BorderAmbassadors.com. He says that private prisons hold a bottom-line interest in their business.
These are for-profit detention centers. They're essentially prison camps. The companies that own them, there's about a half a dozen of them, are only concerned about making profit. So whatever it is that they can get away with is what they do, and they are feeding the very bottom end to these people. The profit prison concept came about years ago and was implemented by Clinton and Gore. Gore out of Tennessee and CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, out of Tennessee, to contain everybody that they can in the prisons because it's like guaranteed occupancy in a motel, except for they don't have to provide anything worthy.
Jay Johnson Castro adds that children are the ones paying the price at the Hutto facility in Texas.
We believe it's a criminal act. We believe it's immoral. We believe it's illegal, inhumane to imprison children who are innocent, regardless of the circumstances surrounding their parents. Many of the people that are detained in Hutto are seeking asylum, which is not a crime. And again, you have Corrections Corporation of America that currently is getting anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000 per month per child or their mother that is imprisoned there. When we first started protesting back in December, the children were in prison cells for 23 hours a day. They had no access to their mothers in many cases, and mothers to the children. They were behind razor wire. They're in prison uniform with little name tags on them. They were not being fed very well. In fact, it's documented that they were losing weight. They were not getting proper medical care. They were being threatened by the guards all the time, that they would be separated from their moms, those that were with their moms. They're given a very short period of time, 15 minutes, to eat breakfast at 5:30 in the morning and lunch and dinner. They can't take food to their cells, which are locked up or were locked up until we started protesting. Now they have them laser controlled. They had no real outside play, and they were not getting proper education. And to this day, there's no certified teachers there, and that violates constitutional rules over education. So the conditions haven't really changed much. We make the comment that a prison camp with a swing set is still a prison camp. And it doesn't make any difference what color you paint the bars.
Jay Johnson Castro works with freedomambassadors.com and borderambassadors.com. Demonstrators are planning to hold a vigil at the Hutto facility on Saturday. In this week's edition of the Political Roundup, presidential candidates spend their time in Iowa as political attacks on fellow candidates are on the rise. Washington editor Leanne Caldwell has more.
Politics heated up for Democrats in Iowa. Senator Hillary Clinton released this radio ad, continuing her strategy of comparing herself to President Bush instead of her fellow Democrats.
If you're a family that is struggling and you don't have health care, well, you are invisible to this president. If you're a single mom trying to find affordable child care so you can go to work, well, you're invisible too.
Meanwhile, former Senator John Edwards reminded Iowa voters that Clinton accepts lobbyists' role in Washington and their campaign donations. Edwards also challenged Senator Barack Obama, who has sworn off lobbyist money in this campaign, to go one step further and dispel lobbyist donations forever. Obama responded by releasing his own initiative to publicize any meetings his White House would have with lobbyists. Republican candidate Mitt Romney cherishes his victory in last weekend's Iowa straw poll.
Keep America always the hope of the earth. Change begins in Iowa, and change begins today. Thank you so very much.
A lousy sixth-place finish was enough for former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson to drop out of the race. John McCain and Rudy Giuliani did not participate. But Giuliani released a radio ad defending his views on immigration.
A person who comes here illegally, commits a crime, should be thrown out of the country. People that come in illegally, we got to stop. Stop illegal immigration by building a fence, a physical fence, and then a technological fence. We then hire enough Border Patrol so they can respond in a timely way. And then, if anybody becomes a citizen, we should make certain that they can read English, write English, and speak English, because this is an English-speaking country.
The ad comes after Romney accused Giuliani of welcoming undocumented immigrants when he was New York City mayor. Giuliani and Edwards published a detailed plan of their foreign policy in the latest issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, which came out this week. Giuliani's central theme is on continuing what he calls the terrorist war on the U.S., a war that could last decades, he says. Giuliani mentioned the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in the final pages of his seven-page essay. He rejected a Palestinian state until the U.S. believes they've earned it. Edwards had a different take on foreign policy. He wrote about re-engaging and cooperating with the world. Meanwhile, Democratic candidate Bill Richardson outlined his foreign policy plan in the latest issue of the Harvard International Review. Like Edwards, Richardson rejects the current unilateral foreign policy and encourages a return to global community.
We're a deeply divided country today, and we need somebody that knows how to negotiate, that is a diplomat.
In congressional news, three Republican members of Congress have decided against running for re-election. Most notably is former House Speaker Dennis Hastert. Deborah Price of Ohio, also a member of leadership, will not run. She nearly lost to her Democratic rival in 2006. And finally, the Diebold company, which manufactures electronic election machines, has experienced another failure, the inability to sell the voting machine portion of their company. In an effort to save some face, they've changed the name to Premier Election Solutions. The name will change, but the voting machines will stay the same. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
The Camp for Climate Change in the UK is taking place outside Heathrow Airport in a peaceful protest against aviation's contribution to climate change. FSRN's Natalia Viana reports.
Organizers of the second Camp for Climate Action have chosen to call attention to pollution caused by aviation. Since last Sunday, about 700 people have been camping and attending workshops at a big field just beside Heathrow Airport. Paddy Gillett is with the group Plain Stupid.
The reason for targeting aviation is that it's the fastest growing cause of climate change. In Britain, it already accounts for nearly 20% of our global warming impact. And that's according to the government's own figures. But more importantly, the projected and encouraged growth for the aviation industry in Britain is set to equal at least 100% of Britain's own emissions reduction target by 2050.
This large marquee in the centre of the field is split into six different areas, so there's six different workshop areas in that tent. There's workshops ranging from sort of discussions about climate change to discussions about practical solutions.
Walking through the camp, organizer Matthew Wright points out that participants are using alternative energy solutions to power the camp.
At the moment, we have four small-scale wind turbines on site. They're the sort of wind turbines which can produce about up to a kilowatt of power, and they're all set up charging car batteries, which can then be used to charge people's mobile phones, people's laptops, and charge lighting for the evenings in the different tents.
Now, what is the actual goal of this camp?
Right, there's a variety of goals of this camp. One of them is for everyone to learn a bit more about our climate and how we affect it as humans and how we can change and adapt and work out solutions. A main point is to resist corporations and government who are building and building this huge infrastructure and making a lot of money and building economies which are unsustainable. We also want to build networks, and we want to bring people in, get people involved in this movement.
According to the Tyndall Center for Climate Change, if the aviation industry continues to grow, jets may end up polluting more than cars do within 6 to 8 years. But not everyone sees air travel as a problem. David Levy works for Flying Matters.
The aviation contributes $11 billion to the UK economy, and air links underpin other elements of our economy, including tourism, financial services, pharmaceuticals, and knowledge sectors such as IT.
Flying Matters is a coalition of companies and organizations that support aviation growth. Levy says the airline industry does pay its way. According to him, the industry is very concerned about its environmental impacts.
There isn't a plane now that contributes nothing towards carbon emissions. And that's why we think that emissions trading is important, because we recognise the impact that aviation can have.
Carbon offsetting is a way in which companies from developed countries can buy credits in the amount of carbon they should be reducing from counterpart industries in developing nations. But according to a report by the World Wildlife Fund, the European Trading Scheme, which has been active since 2005, has failed to deliver any significant emission reductions within Europe. Activists in the climate camp say that while aviation emissions continue to grow, they will act. A mass direct action aiming at disrupting Heathrow's operation will take place next Sunday at 12 noon. In London, Natalia Viana for Free Speech Radio News.
Internet users at corporate and government computers have been editing content on Wikipedia, the go-to online encyclopedia. A new online tool has shown that individuals using computers from Walmart, the Central Intelligence Agency, and congressional offices have all made edits to their pages and related entries. Michael Reagan has the story.
Virgil Griffith, a graduate student at the California Institute of Technology, developed Wikiscanner to track who's made changes to articles on the online encyclopedia. Wikipedia allows any user to anonymously edit the content of its nearly 2 million entries. The scanner works by identifying the IP addresses, the specific internet location assigned to every computer, of any user who's made changes. Jimmy Wales is the founder of Wikipedia. He welcomes the Wikiscanner, which he says adds transparency to the site's content.
We're very excited and happy about it. It's a very cool tool, and it's making use of data that we've published for years and years, and we think it adds to the transparency and openness of the project.
Many of the edits detected by Wikiscanner correct spelling mistakes or factual errors, but others have been used to polish entries by rewriting or removing critical content. For example, computers from the Central Intelligence Agency made changes to the entry on Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. A computer from the Election Systems Division of Diebold, the manufacturer of electronic voting machines, deleted sections that raised concerns about the security of its machines, as well as the fundraising connections between Diebold CEO and President George Bush. And someone from a Walmart computer changed a line that said Walmart workers earn 20% less than other retail clerks. The Walmart revised version said that the average Walmart wage is double the federal minimum. Jimmy Whale says it's impossible to know exactly who made the changes.
Well, we always encourage people not to engage in conflict of interest editing because, you know, we've warned people for years, you're just going to embarrass yourselves. We don't think entries like that come, or edits like that come directly from Walmart per se. It's probably just some employee there at work who's, you know, in an unauthorized way just saw something and wanted to fix it rather than being the actual communications people who would presumably be professional enough to simply contact us or go onto the discussion page and identify themselves and say that they think there's a problem in the article. In terms of the Wikiscanner and how it would relate to that, I suppose if there is some kind of a neutrality problem and there's some sort of a argument going on, it just makes it that much easier for people to check to make sure that whoever's involved is not, you know, have a conflict of interest.
Virgil Griffith, the creator of Wikiscanner, declined to be interviewed for this story. But in a statement, Griffith and Jimmy Wales say they hope the scanner can help make Wikipedia more accountable and more reliable. For the KPFA News, this is Michael Reagan.
And that will do it for today's edition of Free Speech Radio News. From Pacifica Station, KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado.